It's come to order. It's 8:36 on the 7th. I think it's the 7th. My calendar says the 7th. Yeah, it is the 7th. Understanding what this says here, we have two. We have on committee. We have Representative Guerra, Representative Wilson, Representative Gettinger, Vice Chair Fairclough, Stoltz, Representative Dugan, Representative Edmond, Representative Costello, and Representative Tucker. We have a quorum to do business. Two bills before today, House Bill 118, Research and Development Tax Credit, was presented by Commissioner Bell and Deputy Commissioner Fair. And also on our agenda today is House Bill 104, the Alaska Performance Scholarships, is its current name, actually. Welcome, Commissioner and Deputy Commissioner.
Good morning. For the record, Susan Bell, Commissioner for the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, and I believe we have Joanna Bales, Acting Director of the Tax Division for the Department of Revenue, on the phone if there's technical questions. I have a few brief comments that I'd like to share this morning. Governor Parnell introduced this bill to stimulate private sector investment, entrepreneurial activity, and business expansion. The legislation would allow Alaska corporations, Alaska taxpayer, corporate taxpayers, to receive a 20% tax credit. It would not exceed $10 million per taxpayer per year. Key provisions of the bill are that research and development activities must take place in Alaska, either the research and development activities or the payroll of the employees. There's a three-year look back to ensure that the credit is applied only to expenditures that are above a baseline for that particular company. We're mirroring the federal definition in terms of research and development and the allowable activities, and that includes elements such as its discovery of information that's technological in nature. It's the development of new or improved business components and developed through a process of experimentation. Examples of the types of qualifying activities would be developing new prototypes, processes, or formulas, building or improving manufacturing facilities, and developing new technologies or patents. I want to point out that there are a list of activities that are not included, though they're excluded from this, and that includes customary research and market research and data collection. And something that I know is of interest as we had some of our one-on-one discussions, customary or exploration activity that is to determine the existence or quality of any ore or mineral deposit. So that would affect mining and oil and gas exploration is not allowable. Having said that, what I do want to point out is that in both of those industries, looking at new processes, back to those definitions, processes, manufacturing, patents, those kinds of things, are allowable. So the industries are eligible, but just not for that determining the existence of an ore or mineral deposit. A few other comments I want to, or a few examples that I want to share, in addition to the industries that I just mentioned, some successes we've seen in Alaska. Alaska berry growers throughout the state have been exploring the nutraceutical value, particularly high in antioxidants. We have a number of sawmills that have been turning mill waste into fuels, but I also want to point out, while we have lots of successes, and you know, we've been hearing more and more about biofuels, particularly here in Southeast, one of the things we still need to solve, and this type of tax credit would be helpful, is we have a high moisture content, and that's still an issue that has to be addressed. Other examples, using tidal energy to create ice at sea, that's something that's currently being done, but by a university institution that's outside of Alaska. And finally, an example that I wanted to share about taking our seafood processing byproducts out of the waste stream and turning them into valuable products. So again, those are some of the examples that we're seeing that from entrepreneurial activity in Alaska now that would be eligible. 40 other states have established a research and development tax credit. North Dakota in particular, a state we've been hearing a lot about and talking a lot about, has one of the most aggressive tax credits in the nation. Here in Alaska, one of the things that we have seen is that our local universities have not been as engaged.
We only have one university, as I heard yesterday. Yes. We have three college campuses.
We do have Alaska Pacific University for.
No. Oh, I guess.
Only.
Harry McDonald is going to crucify me.
And what's the name of their team?
I respectfully suggest that because my brother was an alumni back.
So was my former boss, Senator Halford.
I personally am a UAF grad, so it's an internal family debate. Anyway, in closing, I was mentioning the university. UAF Chancellor Brian Rogers recently wrote a very nice opinion letter supporting this bill, and they look forward to being significantly more engaged with solving Alaska's unique problems and opportunities. They've recently created an Office of Intellectual Property and Commercialization, very willing partner to proceed with, if this bill is passed, with more research and development in state, solving our problems. In closing, we ask for your support for this bill. Thanks.
I'm so chastened, I'm going to have no questions. Any questions? I represent Fair Club.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My first question is on page one and how we define the actual credit for $10 million. Is that correct? You have to answer instead.
Yes, but sorry, not. Yes, up to $10 million per taxpayer, per, which, you know, in many of the examples that I cited, the applicable uses would be far less than that. We've also had industries that have written letters, including aerospace, saying that their scale of research is far above that, and yet they so they might not be applicable in Alaska for them, but they really encourage the passage of this bill.
Commissioner, I didn't mean to be rude. When you were shaking your head, the people that are listening wouldn't know that you were responding in the affirmative, so I just step back from that. My question has to do with the responsibilities and the fiscal future of Alaska. If each taxpayer can claim $10 million, how will we project how much money that Alaska will have to be able to offer that credit? In the film credit, we have $100 million cap where we knew our all-in number, and then people started receiving money from that lump sum amount. So how can we control this number?
Through the chair, Representative Fairclough, I see your point, and at this point, from Department of Revenue, the fiscal note is indeterminate, and it may be something that you consider is in discussing this or passing it from House Finance to set a ceiling. From operationally, our department does not have any operational expenses anticipated with this. Joanna Bales from the Department of Revenue may also wish to comment on this as well.
Mr. Chairman, we can move to the fiscal note later, and I could hold that question. My issue just is there's no fiscal note for the department, but the state of Alaska, there may be a fiscal note, and even if it's accessed in a small way, could have a substantial amount of money that we might not be able to forecast. So we may want to consider a ceiling, and if we have other information that I haven't covered this morning or earlier about what other states are doing as far as the ceiling and how the credit is utilized, that would be helpful. My second question is on the carry-forward credit or the ability to carry forward for 7 years that credit. Again, that's keeping the state on the hook, and that just multiplies our liability. So it goes along with the first question. And then my last question, Mr. Chairman, is on page 2, line 10, when we talk about not being able to use a federal credit. And so is that a credit or any money going to a particular project that would disqualify the project from?
Chairman Stolz, can I ask if I can verify if Joanna Bales is on the phone?
Yeah, you can ask.
Okay.
Ms. Bales, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am. I am available.
If I may defer to Joanna in responding.
Okay. Right. We have a number of public testifiers, so we'll go through a quick round of questions. We have Representative Wilson, Representative Guerra, and Edgman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And mine's just kind of a follow-up to Representative Faircloth. I know there are many other states that do this. When you came up with the $10 million, was that an average? How did you arrive at that figure?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, we chose that we chose to mirror the federal law for the greatest simplicity in introducing this concept.
And follow up, sir.
Representative Wilson.
And if I'm reading this correctly, they cannot sell these credits; they can only be utilized by that company.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, that's correct. They're not transferable. It would have to be research and development by the company that is wanting to use the credit.
Thank you.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you. You know, I could see places where this would be helpful in the oil patch, but there are, one of the definitions of research and development that the 20% credit, is that what it is? 20% credit would be applicable to would be activities that are useful in development of a new or improved component of the taxpayer. Well, we're expanding directional drilling all the time. That would be an improved component, I would suppose. There's a lot of stuff on the North Slope that gets better every day because the oil industry needs to do that in order to remain competitive. And we've devised whether, and without getting into the oil tax debate, whichever piece of kind of legislation we passed, we've devised legislation that's filled with credits and deductions to get people to do things. And we've seen charts that say with the deductions and credits combined, at prices in the $80 range and above, the state is paying 70-80% of the cost of some of those activities. And I'm wondering with that kind of cost, let's say new directional drilling, where you've expanded it by 20 feet, your ability to reach out, there's going to be a capital expenditure credit of 20%. There's going to be a deduction of 40 or 50%. That gets you to 70. There's going to be a deduction from the federal research and development credit. And you might actually get over 100% at that point when you add this on top of it. And I'm wondering whether, since we've spent so much time and whether whatever kind of oil tax bill passes, since we've already spent time dealing with oil tax credits, and we all think we have the most brilliant ones in our mind anyway, I don't know that this should be added to those as well in the oil industry. So what's your explanation there?
Curtis Thayer, Deputy Commissioner, Representative Garrett through the chair. A couple provisions on this. This is a three-year look back. So this is R&D that's over and above normal R&D a company would expend for normal research. Also, this credit does not, if they get a federal tax credit for R&D, this is over and above, they don't get a double dip, their federal tax credit. So if they apply on their federal income taxes for R&D, it's not a double dip. This is, it has to be over and above. And with the three-year look back, that also gives some protection to make sure that this is over and above their normal spending for research and development.
Very good, Chair.
Representative Garrett.
But for the example of, let's say, the directional drilling process, I mean, there's a lot of, on the North Slope, we've been told costs go up every year. So the three-year look back, that gets solved by the fact that this year, of course, things are going to be more expensive than they were the last 3 years. It's going to be more expensive anyway. So you expand your directional drilling ability by 20 feet. You now have an improved component under this federal definition we're adopting, and we're paying on top of all of the credits and deductions in the oil tax law that we have. And why is that a good idea?
The exploration activity does not qualify. The exploration for oil, for the exploration activity for the association of existence, location, extent, or quality of any ore or mineral deposit does not qualify.
Mr. Garrett, any questions? Go ahead.
Sure. Some of this is not exploration, though. I mean, I guess it depends on how you define exploration, right? We've, you know, when you're reaching further into a known well, I don't know that under some definitions that's not exploration. And I know about as much about how things go on in North Slope as the co-chair for Maine's, so I'm not going to dig deep into this, but there are probably about 300. you know, there are tons of things that go on the North Slope where somebody is going to use this credit, I think.
If I may, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Bales, go ahead and identify yourself, but briefly answer if you wish.
Okay, just real quickly. For the record, my name is Joanna Bales. I'm the acting director of the tax. Representative Guerra, through the chair, your question is well-founded. There are some credits in the oil and gas. The current law right now where expenditures utilized for the R&D credit could also be utilized for the oil and gas credits as well, specifically for the qualified capital expenditure credit and the annual loss carry forward credits, the OT3 and A and B credits. So, I mean, that is something that could happen. We think it would be in limited hearings that we have had that this does seem to be a concern, and if the legislature was interested in tightening that up, there could be a very simple fix to this legislation so that taxpayers couldn't get credit for the same expenditures in two different programs.
Thank you. Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In an attempt to sort of better understand the full effects of this bill, I was just reading through the revenue source book for 2010, and there's two types of corporate income taxes, one that applies to the oil industry and one that doesn't. And so my question to you is, for the portion of this tax credit that wouldn't apply to the oil industry, are we basically looking at the fisheries business tax and the mining license tax would be the sort of the largest participants in the non-oil side of the tax credit?
Again, Chairman Schultz, if we can ask Joanna to respond to Representative Edgman's question.
Through the Chair, Representative Edgman. The way that this, our corporate income tax is applied against all industries. There's just a minor difference in the way the statutes work for oil and gas companies. So all companies that pay corporate income tax would get this credit, including oil and gas companies, for research and development expenditures that are outside of their exploration activities. So this isn't focused at any specific industry. It is available to all industries.
So, Mr. Chairman, just to follow through then, the practical implication of this legislation would mean that all the industries in Alaska would sort of have an equal opportunity to take advantage of this, and it wouldn't be just directed towards one industry, in other words.
Through the Chair, Representative Edgman, I concur with that observation, and that was our intent, was to help stimulate the investment, the manufacturing, and the innovation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of things. So these credits would be stackable, as they say. They would be in addition to any other credits that might be forwarded. Is that correct?
Representative Stoltz, again, I would like Joanna Bales to, I think she can give us the most precise answer to Representative Dugan's question.
Ms. Bales.
Representative Dugan, through the chair. These credits really aren't stackable in the sense that I know some of the oil and gas tax credits are. If you are allowed a federal credit that passes through to Alaska, you can either take the state credit against your corporate income tax or the federal credit. You can't take both. So there is a limitation there. And I'm talking specifically against the corporate income tax. When I discussed the oil and gas tax credits previously, in those cases, in limited circumstances, the expenditures used for the R&D credit against corporate income tax, those same expenditures can be utilized for some of the oil and gas tax credits. But like I said, in limited circumstances.
This, we're trying to make you feel at home like you're in Spinola.
I want you to notice that I have not hit the deck.
Sir Dugan.
Or are you running?
Or retreating.
Too old for that. So I think the way I heard that.
Brief it easier.
That
I have. Oh. Order?
Thanks.
Semi-order. Representative Dugan.
So what I heard there is that they are stackable in certain circumstances. Is that what you said?
Ms. Bales.
Representative Dugan, through the chair. They're not stackable because we're talking two separate tax programs. And this same credit, the expenses for the credit in the corporate income tax, can only be used for a single credit in the corporate income tax. So the answer is no.
That's not the question. The question is that given the array of tax breaks that we already give the industry, would this be potentially an additional 20% that could be billed against the state for this activity by anybody, but including members or companies in the oil patch?
Ms. Bales?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Dugan. Yeah, that is true. That's true. So I guess I'm not following what your definition of stackable is. But, I mean, I'm concerned that there seems to be a hang-up here on the oil and gas tax credits. If you were to look on page 2 of the bill, starting on line 11, and it says there, any federal credit that has been apportioned to the state and claimed under, and then it says AS 4320021. If we were to remove AS 20021 and put in the words under this title, then you would not have the ability to use those expenses in another tax credit program, including the oil and gas. So that might be something, if that's a major concern for the legislature, to think about doing. Again, I have no idea what the administration or the governor would feel about that, but might be something that you might want to consider if you're very concerned about that portion of it.
Well, yeah, Ms. Bales, I think you are the administration. You're recognized.
That was gutsy.
That would be true, but
again,
it seems to be just a
hang-up
here, and
I've been confused about the administration because yesterday we had a governor who was neutral and a commissioner who was aggressive in the support. I'm not surprised. So, Ms. Bales, go ahead.
But again, I think I think that is a concern and something that probably we didn't evaluate as close until we started getting the questions. Because generally, like I said, the only two credits that we could utilize these two expenditures, and those circumstances would be very limited, would be if a company had a loss in the oil and gas tax, and then they could also utilize those same expenditures for credits. But I do understand that concern. So if that change was made to this bill, that concern would go away completely.
Richard Dugan, I want to tell you, if you look like you, I'm trying not to get the image of Diogenes there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, I try not to discuss my hang-ups in this committee because people might misunderstand. But I am concerned that just doing the rough math, that if all of the people we've said who are trying to do something in the oil patch in Alaska was able to build $10 million of that, it would be a $300 million a year tax program. I'm not really sure at this point that I'm willing to support another $300 million a year tax program. I'm not trying to imagine problems here. That's a problem that actually exists under this piece of legislation, I'm not going to support it. So perhaps we can reach an accommodation here that I can support the bill. Thank you.
Yep. Well, it's been the will of the committee to delay the public testimony, so we'll go on to Representative Guttenberg and then Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On page 2, line 12E, you talk about, being able to report if more than three taxpayers. But how are we supposed to know? We don't necessarily need to know what each one is doing, but in the overall picture, how are we supposed to know if this is working? Are we going to see it in an advertisement? Somebody saying, thank the state of Alaska for the tax credit that made this possible? Or are we going to know that people are making claims for research that we did not think that this is what it was targeted at? I mean, is there going to be an audit or some way that there's an accountability for these credits?
Through the chair, basically what this tax credit does is it piggybacks the federal definition, which is actually relatively strict. And so taxpayers would be required to provide the information showing that the research and development was not only conducted in Alaska, but that the research and development met the definition of the federal law. And we would look at that. I mean, there will be oversight of this program. And then what we would report is how many people are taking advantage of the program and the amount of research and development that's being conducted in the state. And things like that. I mean, the intent of this legislation is to try to bring in some new technology, new industries, and research and development activities into Alaska, which is something we haven't seen for a long time. So, yeah, there will be oversight of this program.
So, if I may. So,
through the chair, please, President Gunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is, at what point when we see 1,000 people picking blueberries, are we going to know that there was a result of research? Is there at any point that it's going to be public?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, as specific activities, that type of information may or may not be able to report it, provided that we are maintaining taxpayer confidentiality. I mean, the concern that we have here, specifically with research and development, is there's a lot of business processes that companies are hesitant to make public because it could be detrimental to their business in terms of their competition. So we have to kind of gauge that against the public need to know and simply curiosity sometimes. I guess you do need to have some faith in your tax administration as well.
It's my intent. I'm going to go into the public testimony, and I'm not going to have this bill pass out today. I'm going to give Commissioner Butcher a chance to confer with Commissioner Bell and make sure all the departments of the administration are have a coherent and cohesive message, which on a piece of legislation that's a priority governor's bill. I think you understand, Mr. Thayer and Commissioner Bell. So we're going to take the public testimony. And Ms. Maria, and I'm going to confine public testimony to 3 minutes, and which will probably be hard for Mr. Pop, but we'll try. Dan White from the University of Alaska.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Dan White. I'm the Associate Vice Chancellor for Research at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. I was charged by Chancellor Brian Rogers with leading the Office of Intellectual Property and Commercialization for the university. The goal of this office is to move technology from the university into the private sector. I'm also the director of the Institute of Northern Engineering, the Engineering Research Enterprise at UAF. A critical element of economic development in Alaska is moving R&D into the private sector. When UAF conducts applied research and then licenses the technology developed to the private sector, those businesses gain competitive advantage in the global market. This critical link in economic development is enhanced when businesses can invest in the R&D itself. House Bill 118 would allow the state to provide a significant incentive to businesses to take advantage of emerging opportunities. This bill contributes to the university's mission in conducting R&D, as well as getting R&D into the private sector and long-term economic development. Particularly, as this bill results in business and industry-funded research at the University of Alaska, a bridge is built between the two, one that leads to job growth and economic diversification for the state. It's on this basis that I support House Bill 118. Thank you.
Thank you. Alan Johnson from Team Network, are you there?
Yes, I am. My name is Alan Johnson. I'm an Encore career with Team Network. In the previous 35 years as a regional manager of the New York Stock Exchange firm in Alaska. Very strong supporter and passionate about developing innovation and entrepreneurship in Alaska. We've been involved in facilitating and sponsoring business plan competitions at UAA, UAF, UAS, and APU for the last 11 years. Competition is coming up April 23rd for anybody in the area. But Welcome Survey that came out in 2008 for Entrepreneurial Capacity Index, they have Alaska listed as dead last in the United States. We have so many opportunities up here, and our aspiration index, what we think that we can do, is so low. And the idea of having some incentives to encourage people to dream big and think nationally and getting too much of it is not a big risk to me right now. I have no problem with putting a cap, and I think that's a good idea. I think the tax incentives should be priming the pump, not filling the gas tank. But, boy, we got to prime the pump to get competitive, not just on a national basis, but on a global basis. We got so many opportunities, and it's just such a shame to see us where we are right now versus what we could be doing. And if there's anything that I can do to support this in any way, I'm very much in favor of seeing the university being able to commercialize and tie it into the private sector. And thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Alan. Any questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Edgman.
Just a quick note to say hello to Alan. He and I did serve on a board a few years back that sort of dealt with this subject matter and also to attest to his passion for the subject.
Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you, Alan. Christy Bell, are you here? Christy Bell?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. For the record, Christy Bell, Director, University of Alaska Center for Economic Development. In regards to direct impacts to the University of Alaska, I think you've already heard several positions. I can cover a little bit more. The University of Alaska system is very much interested in supporting greater private sector research and development and opportunities that will arise through public-private collaborations. The overall research budget at the University of Alaska system is approximately $123 million per year. This is largely public research with some private sector collaboration. A specific and perhaps very measurable outcome of this tax credit, the University of Alaska system could also market the use of the incentives to private firms to encourage the use of the CRAE or other assets of the university, such as the supercomputing system. There are also many other opportunities for collaborative research. I believe Mark Myers, our Vice Chancellor of Research, has already reviewed these under a prior testimony. Historically, and now more than ever, institutes of higher learning are identifying and leveraging opportunities for faculty and students to engage in research and development activities. Research is a tool for increased scholarship as well as a means of growing and developing the capacities of faculty and students. Research not only yields scientific knowledge, it is also a strong component of fostering innovation, seeding new companies, and creating jobs and new streams of personal and corporate income. As one point of reference, a National Science Foundation study found that 73% of the science papers cited in industry patents were funded through contracts with university research operations and the public-private collaborations that stem from those. As far as Alaska is currently struggling with how to bring new money into its economy, as a resource-rich state, one alternative is to add value to our existing products. Some of those have already been discussed today. But in order to be competitive in today's global economy, investments in research and development that result in new innovations and processes will be necessary for pursuit. When we look at how Alaska ranks, we've already heard, one comparison with the rest of the nation, District of Columbia and Puerto Rico, we tend to rank between 43rd and 51st. When we consider business, R&D activity, all investments in R&D at the university level, high-tech employment, SBIR funding, patents awarded, that we, when you consider all those aspects, we still rank 43 to 51. In reviewing tax incentives, we know that innovation is spurred on when firms receive tax credits. This is particularly the case when there is a corporate income tax. This is why we see innovation in states such as California, Massachusetts, Texas, and New Mexico. New York. I realize we're not talking complete apples here. Many states offer R&D tax incentives to attract corporations and businesses and get them to locate or expand their operations in a particular state. These incentives are also used to encourage investments in an R&D facility. These
strategies are typically part of a broader economic development strategy that seeks to encourage the use of existing assets. In conclusion, the University of Alaska believes House Bill 118 has the potential to provide additional opportunity for public-private collaborations and further supports basic and applied research that may ultimately stimulate the economy, attract private capital investments and jobs, and drive innovation towards products and services that ultimately expand our base industry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Christy. Any questions? Representative Garrett.
Thank you. Christy, you've heard a lot of questions around the table. I think people agree with the concept that Alaska is lagging in terms of high-tech industry, and we would like to do things to bring more high-tech and innovative industry to the state. And so our questions aren't directed really to that component of the bill. They're directed to the sort of parts of the bill that go beyond that. But we appreciate your testimony.
Thank you very much. Appreciate where you're all coming from, too.
Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, Peter Stitzel.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Peter Stitzel, and I represent a startup firm that proposes to take fish waste from southeast communities in Sitka for processing into fish meal and other products. The EPA is forcing more and more seafood companies to barge waste offshore, but our technology can turn a liability that depresses fish prices into one that increases them. The research that has made this possible was funded by NOAA Fisheries, Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation, University of Alaska, and many other private firms. Supporting research through this R&D tax credit can be very effective to inspire and leverage firms to establish Alaska-based operations. For example, our technology allows us to stabilize and ship the approximately 60 million pounds of southeast Alaska salmon waste into Sitka for primary processing. Having the cheapest power in the state, Sitka was chosen because it takes about 3/8 of a kilowatt hour to process each pound of waste. And since the product is stabilized, we will only operate the factory when the utility could not have sold the power. A boon to the $100 million Blue Lake Dam expansion, this $2 million in annual potential power, would be a lost opportunity for the city of Sitka were it not because they are not part of the power grid. Many people do not realize it, but wild Alaska salmon waste has a special combination of attributes that no other fishery resource has in abundance. So having the world's largest concentration of this rare material in Sitka has garnered this considerable attention from both large and small nutraceutical, feed, and pet food companies. I've always felt that the Sitka facility would become a big business incubator for many offshoots, especially for those in the high-value nutraceutical business, where higher Alaska shipping and labor costs are a non-factor compared to other manufactured goods. Mm-hmm. Having this R&D tax credit as an added incentive could be the last piece of the puzzle for a new firm or an existing one to make its decision to base its operations or increase its R&D efforts in Alaska. As living proof that public-private partnerships and good research can lead to great things, I strongly urge you to vote for this very important bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Any questions? Seeing none, Bill Pope, are you there?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Bill Pope with the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation. I'm testifying in support of the bill. Many of those that have gone before me have already spoken to most of the attributes that we support this bill, that we're basing our support on. But I would reference again that this will help to generate innovation based in Alaska. It is not an end-all, catch-all. It is not going to be the silver bullet, but it is an important component in an overall strategy to develop new industries in IT and renewable energy and life sciences and in biotech, just to name a few. The tech transfer opportunities that this will help to encourage in attracting venture capital, which is currently very rare in our state, is an important aspect of why this bill is important to pass. It does reduce risk in a very risky proposition in the world of R&D, which will help to attract that capital, and it will help to generate the new industries that will help to further diversify our economy in the coming decades. It's a key component to an overall picture that needs to be addressed in the coming years to attract new business and to attract new innovation, and therefore we do support this bill and hope that you will pass it out of committee.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you. Is there anybody else on off-net or offline? Seeing none, not hearing none. Anybody in the room here want to testify? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony. We'll be setting this bill aside, Mr. Chester. Yes, so this will be set aside, and we'll take a brief and easy.
Okay,
Representative Fairclough.
I just had a quick question of the commissioner or deputy commissioner. On the issue of the oil and gas credit, that's not how I read the bill. And if we look at letters of support that came in, we saw Lockheed Martin on there, which was very interesting that they might be interested in a facility. Pharmaceutical companies come to mind as research and development for something that might be a bigger ticket item. So my first question, Mr. Chairman, is was it the intent to be able to supplement oil and gas, or can we, with your support, consider a CS that would include the reference that was indicated for just the chapter, because we are looking at economic development and new businesses coming in the state, not offering a layering of any oil and gas credits.
Representative Fairclough, through the chair, we had proposed this wanting to be as open as possible, recognizing that we do have technological challenges in all of our industries, and there's opportunity for processes and patents and things. So I appreciate the opportunity that we're being given with the questions that were raised in committee today to confer internally and come back, because, again, I think that recognizing we're a resource-rich state and yet we're looking for high-wage, high-tech jobs, our preference in introducing this was to be wide open to see what Alaska potential.
Mr. Chairman, I would just put on the record that I advocated for oil and gas tax credits in the oil and gas bill, and this is economic development, and so I certainly am open as one member of the body. I understand wanting to create flexibility, but oil and gas credits belong in that statute, not in this one, in my humble opinion. And then thinking of larger corporations, then the $10 million may not be as a big a fear to me if we actually create jobs in Alaska. And so I was wondering, when you come back before us, if you could give us a comparison, because when I read the literature enclosed, it seems like ours were very lavish compared to the examples that you provided us in a response to, I believe, to Representative Holmes, where it listed five other states, and the credits were substantially smaller. So if we have fish that we are trying to hook and bring into Alaska to prosper, then maybe I know I'm bringing in the fish battles. I'm sitting too close, apparently. I've got a net in the water. Anyway, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to see what other states are doing, and if there are larger companies that we're trying to attract, I'm supportive of that. But again, I'm looking from a financial and fiscal stability perspective of we have to know the limit of what we can expend in a particular year to move forward. And that doesn't have to happen now, but I'm interested in a cap. I'm interested in not having stackable credits outside of this particular department, per se's oversight. And I'm question a little bit the seven-year carry forward, and if you could provide me at a later date what that modeling might be. I know that new businesses typically fail in the first 5 years, and so that plays into it a bit for me, but if it's a large corporation that is different than that, maybe we, if it's a big, Premier Blue Cross or some other large organization that really isn't dependent on stability, I wonder why we're still continuing to carry forward that credit. So 7 years is a little long to me.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with the comments that the members have made as well. What I'm troubled with is we're incorporating a federal definition of research and development, and there's the second line that you have on it is for development of a new or improved component of the taxpayer, right? And so I'm all over trying to incentivize high-tech business and new innovative businesses in the state, and that part of the bill I like. But it seems that if you were to open a new tobacco store or a new liquor store, by definition, since you didn't exist yesterday and today you exist, you'll have developed a new improved component of the taxpayer. So does this apply to like a new liquor store and a new tobacco store also? And what would preclude this from, if I'm wrong, what would preclude this from applying there?
Representative Guerra, through the chair, that while we've discussed some of the activities that qualify and do not qualify, the first threshold that the research and development has to meet is four items, and I'll be more specific because I had roughly described them or broadly described them in my initial comments. The purpose, definition of a qualified research is, one, purpose is discovering information technological in nature, and, two, the application of which is intended to be useful in the development of or a new or improved component of the taxpayer, and substantially all of the activities constitute a process of experimentation, and the experimentation is for a qualifying activity or purpose. So, again, that it helps set some parameters around which then we look at those activities that qualify.
Thank you, through the chair. Thank you. I didn't see all the ands, so that answers that question. Thank you. And just on,
let's go through the chair. We know it's the 90. We'll kind of figure out the rules here.
Sorry, I thought
80. Through
the chair?
Yes.
Wishing 90.
Thank you. Let me just ask you about the seafood industry. So we'll probably want this to extend there. The seafood processing tax. Let's say you have a seafood company that does the smart thing that most companies do, which is they don't declare themselves a C corporation, so they don't have to pay the corporate tax. Will they not be eligible for this then? Because they pay the seafood, I forget what you call the processing tax. Right? But if they pay the fish tax, but they're not a corporation, they won't qualify?
Through the chair, Representative Garrett, they need to be a Alaska taxpayer as a C corporation eligible for corporate taxpayers. So some organizations organize as an S corp, LLCs, other things. It needs to be a C corp and first and foremost Alaska taxpayer.
And then just lastly, through the chair, Representative Fairclough, I think raised something for us to consider, which is a cap. I would also ask you to consider maybe. What we did with the film tax credit bill, which is a sunset and a report, so we know how the credits were used 3 years from now, and then we can take a look and see if it's working. And that would, at least a discussion on that might be useful. And that's all I have.
Thank you. Representative Garrett brings up a good point. The raw fish tax, I'm hoping that it's not eligible for this because the communities are very dependent upon the raw fish tax, and if that's taken away from them, kind of puts a hole in their budget, so I'm just hoping. I tried to read it. I didn't see anything relating to a raw fish tax as corporate. any other questions before we close?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Kocher.
And I apologize for not going to the chair. I'm not going to the chair. That's it. I also just want to clear the record. I probably didn't mention APU because they don't appear before us asking for money so often. I forget they're there because they're quietly doing their job, and I actually have worked for two past AMU / APU graduates. I mean, former Representative and Senator Randy Phillips and former Representative and Senator Rick Halford, both distinguished alums. So I wanted to acknowledge the importance of APU as I unintentionally slighted them, and I hold them in high reverence. And again, it's because they're not here with their hands out all the time that I forgot about them.
Mr. Chair, the other question directed to you was, is it the Knights? Is that?
No. The APU's team?
The sports team.
When they had a basketball team, I think it was the Knights.
You guys forgetting who the chair is here? Not quite that easy.
I thought all sports was.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm done, sir.
From Sam Dugan.
I'm pretty sure that the co-chairman could actually answer that question. I just wanted to say, since we're sort of talking about this bill that's in front of us, I've got some problems with the inclusion of the federal tax codes because the information that I've got here is not very specific. You know, it says things like the federal tax code allows developing new technology. Well, okay,
what exactly are we talking about there? Does that mean if, you know, somebody invents a new stapler that qualifies? It's just pretty broad. The environmental testing is pretty broad as well. I'm not looking to be able to pass a test on what the federal tax code allows, but these are pretty big things we're talking about paying money for here, and I'd like a better explanation of what exactly we're letting ourselves into specifically in terms of what's going to be allowable under the bill. Thank you.
So you got your homework. Seeing no other questions, we'll take a brief readings and allow the Commissioner Hanley and his people to come up.
Back to order. It's 9:34. We have Commissioner Hanley and Ms. Behrens from Commissioner Hanley, Department of Education, and Ms. Behrens, Commission on Postsecondary Education, here for House Bill 104. Let's give us a 2-minute introduction. We're going to go to public testimony. Just folks have been waiting an hour and a half or so, and then we'll come back for a more detailed discussion.
Will do. Thank you. For the record, Mike Hanley, Commissioner of Education and Early Development. I want to thank you for hearing HB 104 this morning. As I believe you're aware, this legislation has been put forward from Governor Parnell in order to fund the The program that was established by you last year with broad support. The idea is that this is going to offer incentives for students and families across the state and ultimately transform our kindergarten through college or career education in the state. The scholarship is basically an invitation for students based on the principle that if you take courses that are going to prepare you for success beyond high school, you work hard and you perform well in high school, that the state will reward you for that as you pursue those post-secondary opportunities in the state. And the bill is basically, although it's changed slightly through the legislative process, the original bill basically has three components to it. The first one is simply a name change, and that one is changing it from a merit scholarship to performance scholarship, as simply to avoid any potential copyright issues. The second one is that it establishes both an award fund from which scholarships can be drawn from, and an investment fund in which the legislature can make appropriations into and taxpayers can make donations to. And the third one is to incentivize donors through corporate tax credits. The statute, basically, right, at this point, the governor is looking to for this program to be successful, looking for this to have a sustainable and predictable source of funding. I'm sitting before you today to make a commitment to you that our department and myself, we have already been working hard with our school districts across the state. We'll continue to do so to make sure that our students have the ability to respond in the affirmative as this scholarship program comes forward. So I want to thank you for the opportunity to present that today, and we're definitely available for questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. We're going to go right into the public testimony. I don't think we have a lot of people signed up today, and so we'll keep the option if other folks do come back later, reopening. But from Ketchikan, is Ms. Eakes still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Please go ahead and identify yourself for the public record, and we're anxious to hear your testimony.
Yes, my name is Karen Eakes, and I live in Ketchikan. I'm an ex-school board member and a retired educator who has continued to be involved in educational issues here in Ketchikan. For the past 2 years, I, along with others, have been heavily involved with our effort to improve our high school graduation rate here in Ketchikan. Our task force, Empowering Youth, is under the umbrella of the recently formed Ketchikan Wellness Coalition. Back in 2009, we were alarmed to learn that a third of the high school cohort who had entered ninth grade in 2005 did not graduate in 2009. We started to research national, state, and local dropout statistics and learned that this was fairly typical, and in many places in our state, we looked into the various reasons that young people make the decision to drop out of high school, which are many, and investigated recommended solutions. Prepared a PowerPoint presentation that we shared with the school board, the city council, and the borough assembly, the Chamber of Commerce, and recently held a community-wide forum on this issue in February. One of the recommendations in our PowerPoint was the funding of the passage of the Alaska Performance Scholarship Program. We are deeply concerned about the long-term effects of this short-term decision, not only for the individuals that make the decision to drop out, but for the economic and social repercussions for the communities and state and nation that they live in. One of the recent statistics we found is that the average dropout contributes about $300,000 less to society than the average high school graduate. With up to one-third of, or more of young people making this choice, it has devastating repercussions for the economic issues of our state and our society. I believe that most of the social and economic problems in our society today in recent years are due to a higher and higher percentage of young people not seeking and or receiving the education and training they need to become productive and responsible citizens. In many cases, this is for financial reasons. This scholarship program would be an important signal from the whole state to one of the concerns about passing this legislation is about providing equal access to this program to students around the state and make amendments and accommodations for those students. If the concern is the cost, ask yourselves what bigger cost is there than having an uneducated and underemployed citizenry. Over the long term, this investment in our students will come back manyfold to our state in productive, educated, and socially responsible citizens. We are one of the wealthiest states in the country, with the legislature continually able to put billions into savings, resource development, and innovation. Please put some of this money into this scholarship program to assist our students, our citizens, and our future leaders. I don't believe there is a more important piece of legislation before you right now, and I urge you to fund and pass House Bill 104. Thank you.
Ms. Eakes, you've obviously put on work and time on this. I think I'd like to see if the committee members would like to ask you any questions.
Of course.
Sure. Representative Guerra.
Thank you. Based on your familiarity with this, last year when this bill came before us, just as a merit scholarship bill, there was discussion that many other states that had a merit scholarship bill had an exception for those students who couldn't take the courses, couldn't find the courses that they needed to take to qualify, or maybe got a GED, and they called it an alternative pathway that would also let the department come up with new regulations to let extra students qualify if they proved that they were bright. Do you know anything about the alternative pathway approaches taken by other states? And can you offer any comment on that?
I do not know about that, I'm sorry to admit. We've been so involved in our project here, but I haven't done the research that you asked for.
Okay.
I think opening it up to as many students as possible is what we need to do. It's just the future of the state, basically, in my opinion. And I think our young people are falling through the cracks for a lot of different reasons, and we need to support them.
Thank you.
And Ms. Hicks, you don't have to apologize. The only folks that have to apologize, these guys at the table don't know those answers. So thank you very much. And my sincere appreciations for your involvement in this issue. It sounds like it's just not a passing issue by any measure, and we look forward to hearing from you again.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else? I don't have anybody else written down here. Is there anybody else here in the crowd? Here in Juneau. We'll close public testimony, but we certainly will reopen it if folks show up. As I know the volume of mail I've got on this, there is a lot of public interest. It's probably our fault in process of this bill has been kind of floating on the schedule, so it's an imperfection of the legislative process. So appreciate Ms. Eakes making out and following it, knowing that it was up, and others that probably got frustrated, which I apologize for, as we had other issues that overwhelmed us. So with that, public testimony is closed, and we'll recommence with a more detailed presentation.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Diane Behrens, Executive Director of the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. And at your discretion, I can take either approach. I can either speak at a high level to the differences between the original bill, which the commissioner spoke to, or I can walk through a sectional analysis of the bill itself.
What do you think would be most efficacious for your cause?
I think the shorter version.
I'm not trying to direct you. I just I want you to communicate, and I assume you're advocating for the passage, so why don't you use the methods you think best facilitates that.
I will do so. Thank you, sir.
And if Ms. Herman needs to come up to assist, I'll call her up as well. She's a friend. I'm teasing. So.
As the commissioner mentioned, the education version of HB 104 does continue the changing of the name of the program, and the House the Education Committee did not change that. The first change that they made was to amend the participating institution requirements, and that's in section 6 of the bill, which essentially they add two additional requirements for post-secondary institutions to receive scholarship recipients. They would have to offer mandatory advising and counseling for those students, and they would have to offer assurances that the courses of the courses necessary to complete a certificate or degree in a timely fashion would be made available to the student. Because we're currently in the process of approving institutions to participate for the fall of 2011, the effective date on those new requirements would be fiscal year 13. The second change that the bill makes is it creates a provision in the award fund that clarifies that if funding is insufficient, scholarships would be paid on a pro rata basis and no new scholarships would be awarded. And that's only in the event of a shortfall. With respect to the investment fund that the bill creates, the House also creates a fund within the general fund. It's no longer...
The House Education version?
Yes, the House Education version. Thank you, sir. It's no longer strictly an investment fund. It's a fund into which appropriations, donations, and investment income may be appropriated. It's a non-lapsing fund in the general fund. And it also creates a provision similar to the community revenue sharing that anticipates a time at which new appropriations may not be put into the fund. So it structures the fund so that there's a step-down allowance in the funding level. It suggests that a total of $160 million would be kept in the fund, and if no new appropriations were put into the fund in a year, that there would be sufficient funding left in the fund so that students who were had received their initial scholarship would continue to receive scholarships through the through their college program. And there are no other changes that the Education Committee made to the bill. If the members have specific questions, Mr. Chair, I'd be...
We'll start with Representative Costello and then Gera.
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Behrens, my question is on page 4, line 27 and 28, where high school is defined. So in the case of the nine-star high school completion program, would students who graduate from that program be eligible?
We have to defer to the commissioner.
Commissioner Hanley.
I'm not familiar with the status of the nine-star program in regards to the performance scholarship at this time. I can sure check on that. Yeah.
Through the chair.
Representative Costello.
So if it's accredited, it qualifies, or if it's a homeschool program, and I'm wondering if some of the alternative high school programs in the state that serve at-risk youth, if those students would be eligible. And so I just would ask that you would perhaps look into that and let me know if that definition needs to be expanded in some way to assure that those students are eligible.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Costello, it's the intent that this would be offered to all students, so it's not the format per se of the school, but the qualifications that we are providing for our students, the opportunity to take a rigorous set of courses that are set up in the scholarship fund, as well as the scores on the ACT and those qualifications. So it would be our intent that any school that offers those opportunities for students that we allow them to take advantage of this.
Thank you.
Representative Gira.
Thank you. Just so I understand the terminology that's being used, you've got two separate scholarships in this bill. The Alaska Advantage Education Grant, and that's the sort of traditional needs-based one, and then the Alaska Performance Scholarship Award. Am I right? Those are two, the one is the merit-based and one is the needs-based?
Through the chair, Representative Gara, thank you for pointing that out. I did not mention that. The other change is that the fund that is established to pay out scholarship awards has been expanded to include Alaska Advantage Education Grant funding as well. The same is true for the fund that's created that appropriations would be made to. that is expanded, and I apologize for that oversight.
Through the chair, thank you. But just the Alaska Advantage Education Grant, that's the same as exists now, that's the needs-based one?
Through the chair, Representative Phillips, that's
correct. Okay, and then through the chair. There are a lot of numbers starting on page 6, this amount and that amount, but is there anything in this bill that apportions how much of the money goes to one program as to the other, or is that going to be a year-by-year legislative fight?
Through the chair, Representative Gar, that would be an annual decision that the legislature would make.
Okay. And then just finally, Mr. Chair.
Please go ahead.
I distributed an amendment, and I frankly don't care about the wording of it, but the former Commissioner of Education advocated for the merit-based program. He conceded that there were a couple flaws. One of the flaws was that in a lot of districts, we don't have the courses to allow people to qualify, and I still understand that some districts think they will not be able to have those courses. And then the other is that some people are very bright, but for whatever reason have to leave school their senior year because maybe there's a family crisis and they end up getting a GED. They've taken most of the courses, but you know that last year they just didn't. And so in a lot of other states, the former commissioner said, when we do the merit-based scholarship, we have something called an alternative pathway for those students that weren't able to get the courses or had to get a GED. And the former commissioner recommended we consider the alternative pathway. And I'm wondering whether you would help us with an alternative pathway for those students who are bright and capable, but their school district doesn't offer the courses, or they had to get a GED because something happened in their family and they just weren't able to complete school.
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, thank you for the amendment. I'm working really hard with all of our school districts. We've done surveys with our superintendents across the state. At this point, we've had three that have been identified that said, we're not sure if we can get there yet. We don't have a path in 2013 to offer all the courses. So we're working really directly with those school districts. The other ones that have said that, yes, they'll be able to offer the courses required, does not mean that they're saying it with gusto. We know that there's going to be a challenge across the state in offering those. That's a challenge that falls squarely on my lap to work with these districts. I'm confident that we can offer what is required for our students across the state. I would surely, if there is a situation due to situations of a school district not being able to offer what is required, I would surely be willing to consider that as a hardship. As a matter of fact, we currently have, for the next 2 years, as we're implementing this program, we have what's called a grace period. And if, because of situations beyond the student's control, they weren't able to take a course, but they were able to indicate on the SAT or ACT or the work please assessment that they are prepared and ready to go, we would offer a grace period. We would still allow them to be eligible for the scholarship during that grace period and allow them to take that course either in the summer or as a part of the beginning program at the university level, kind of as a dual credit. So I am sensitive to that. At this point, I am concerned about the GED portion when we're looking at a performance scholarship with the goal of addressing not only incentives for students to make it into post-secondary education, but also be prepared for that, the incorporation of the GED into this performance scholarship causes me concern.
I find myself in part, at least partial agreement, Representative Garrett. We're talking about a door for opportunity. I want to make sure we're not slamming it shut, and at the very least keeping that door cracked open with, but I don't want to swing it wide open and make this less than a performance. And we might be able to find a meeting. I'm evolving. I'm trying to understand the solution. I'm sorry, Representative Garrett.
Sure. Thank you, Representative Stoltz. I understand you want, for the performance scholarship, you want this to be for high-achieving students. Though as an aside, I'm not so sure that we should be spending money on those who get a 2.5 GPA. That's an aside. That money, I think, should go to needs-based. But on the GED issue, I don't want you to offer the performance scholarship to low-achieving students. But like you said, if they meet the SAT or ACT, or you mentioned another test requirement, and they then take those extra courses that you want in summer school, why punish somebody? There are people who drop out and get a GED because their family circumstances are not just like the Beaver Cleaver family circumstances, right? They're bright people. So what about it? I didn't mean to insert GED students who don't exceed in academics, but just like the standards you mentioned, couldn't you work it in if they had a acceptable ACT or SAT score and then took those other courses? Then they would seem to fit in the same pot as the people who didn't have those courses available to them. That's what I meant.
Through the chair,
Representative. I think we've gone enough on this. We understand the issue, and I've thrown the door open to my friend there, and I think we can talk. Representative Wilson and then Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And back to the definition on page 4 on high school. There's a lot of parents who do homeschooling. I did homeschooling. My children all got GEDs. I hope they were above the 2.5. But my question is about the programs that is approved by the department. So I'm not exactly sure how that would be if you had a homeschooler in which you did it yourself, you didn't take any state monies to do it, and brought forward your own coursework, how you would do something like that to be approved so that your children would have the same opportunity.
Commissioner.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, our goal is not to put up hurdles, but to keep our expectations high for these students which they feel prepared. So it would be a recognition of the courses that they took, matching up, although they may not be called Algebra 1 or Algebra 2, that we have an indication that student has met those requirements and does have that ability to be successful as well as the ACT or SAT scores. As a positive matter of point, we, our first applicant for the scholarship program is in Fairbanks and has just been accepted as a homeschooler with a very high ACT score and has just been approved for that.
Ms. Behrens, and then back to
Representative Wilson. The department has developed an eligibility determination process. So there's a application that the homeschooled student would submit along with information about the courses they took. So there's an assessment that takes place to ensure that it's a parallel program to, you know, not precisely, but similar to what they would have taken in a private or public school. And then the test scores are also collected. So that's the process to determine the eligibility of a student that is not otherwise reported through the public school system.
And Mr. Wilson, please.
Also, I'm not exactly sure what the Alaska Advantage now put in as a needs-based. If I'm reading this correctly, that you would not necessarily have to have all the same qualifications to qualify for the needs-based area. So we basically have, if I'm reading this right, two separate programs in one bill. So if I know that, and I've heard it from children, that my family's not as well off, I'll use that to be a little bit more politically correct. Therefore, I know I'm already going to go through the channel needs-based. Does that not take away from the intent of the initial bill of trying to get them to take harder classes? Or
through the chair, Representative Wilson, the only combinations that occur in the bill are simply in the award fund from which monies would be paid out and the investment fund to which appropriations are made. Those have been combined in this bill. There are no other changes to either the Alaska Advantage grant requirements or the scholarship requirements. We will have two whether this change occurs in the bill or not. We now have two separate programs in statute. We have a scholarship program that is performance based, and we have an Alaska Advantage education grant that is needs-based. So I think they complement each other. They do not conflict. One program, the Performance Scholarship, is available only to graduates of the 2010 high school class and later. The Alaska Advantage Grant Program is available to any student attending an accredited institution in the state. There are minimal academic standards that they have to meet. They have to be making good progress. They have to be earning sufficient credits, but it is strictly a needs-based program in the Alaska Advantage Grant.
Follow-up. Maybe I'm not asking the question correctly, because the way I'm seeing this, because I know Alaska Advantage takes care of those who've been out of high school, but I'm talking about those who are graduating from high school. There's going to be two programs that they could possibly go for. It could be for the scholarship program, as we've been talking about, or the Alaska Advantage. And my understanding last year when the bill was put forward that we were trying to put all students on the same level so that everyone had the opportunity to be able to excel. And I would say that this takes away from that by having basically two paths. So, but you're telling me that that's not true.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I don't believe that is true. We have two programs with two different policy objectives that hopefully lead to the same result, and that's a trained Alaskan ready to contribute to the workforce. If you bear in mind the amounts of aid available under the programs, that may be helpful to you. The maximum grant award under the scholarship program is $4,755 a year. The maximum base grant under the needs-based program is $2,000 a year. So if you have a student who is a low-income student who happens to qualify for the grant, but who also has worked hard and also qualifies for one of the three levels of the scholarship, they will have some amount of aid to assist them in paying the cost of attendance. But if you also bear in mind that the cost of full-time attendance at the University of Alaska is typically about $18,000 a year, you will see that there would be prime motivation for an individual to prepare themselves to maximize the resources the state is putting out there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Thomas, who I previously skipped over, which is my peril there.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I'm surprised there's only three districts. I have 13, and last year I voted against this bill because the majority of my district says they wouldn't be able to qualify. And then the commissioner again said, well, everybody in Alaska qualified. This year I had the school boards in my room, the school districts, the superintendents, and they were all, at least three or four of them said they didn't qualify. And maybe what they're telling you and what they're telling me are two different things. So I'm not really, I'm still not sold on it. I think that we're going to be left behind 3 to 4 years because I have some schools that I know don't have all the courses qualified. And I think that the disadvantage is probably some of the rural school districts. But I had a couple of questions in regards to the correspondence, I understand. But the first time I've had some students come in this year who are taking correspondence from a religious correspondence class or school outside the state of Alaska, would they be eligible? And I listen to Diane, say if they follow these different criteria, they can be. But we're not excluding religious correspondence classes.
Mr. Chair, I believe the assessment is going to be made of the curriculum the student has taken, not of the source of that curriculum. So if the curriculum passes the assessment, if their test scores are sufficiently to qualify and the related GPA is sufficient to qualify, then they should.
Can we firm that up rather than believe and just say yes
I would
in the language?
I'd like, Mr. Co-Chair, written correspondence on the eligibility of homeschools, charter schools,
so it's clear.
I want clarity on this. Those are, frankly, I have a lot more concern about.
Chair Thomason. These are for Alaska students in Alaskan institutions. So if they were in a high school that took a correspondence course, it was incorporated into their transcript, then that's obviously become part of their transcript.
Right, but their parents don't want them to go to public schools. They do take classes, and I think these are out-of-state correspondents, but they live in the villages that I have. So
I understand what you're saying.
Okay. And the other one, the last question I have, because I've been involved with the Village Corporation, had scholarships that we awarded, and we gave them to the colleges, and then the student went for 30 days and quit. And the university ends up with, $10,000 for the year, or this year would be $4,700. So how is that going to work? I mean, if a student quits because we own the university, do we get the money back? I mean, I hate to just keep throwing money at the university. They'll bring everybody in to chase them home or something, but this is a thought.
Mr. Chair, there are refund policies that we would be requiring the schools to comply with. So it really would depend on the point at which the student left the program and the refund that was owed at that time. But that would be paid back to the state, not to the student. Right.
Also, Mr. Co-Chair, that I wanted people to know, just because I make the amendment doesn't mean I'm going to vote for the bill, because I know that we do that on the floor and vote. So I want this amendment, and then they amend it, and then we'll vote for it. I'm just, you know, I'm sure other students elsewhere in Alaska that may have the same kind of concerns. Doesn't make it better for me yet, so thank you.
Thank you.
But I am listening to it, so I agree with the co-chair.
I'd listen to this guy. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Some of your responses to Representative Wilson's questions were lay out the groundwork very well. I mean, these are two different pathways. Sometimes they overlap, but if you could take one, you certainly would, the higher one. But on the Advantage program, I'm just trying to be clear in what I understand, and that is, in order to be eligible to the Advantage program, you have to prove eligibility for the need, and you have to be enrolled. Other than that, there's no scholastic, or is there maintaining a certain grade point average in school?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, you have to maintain what's called academic good progress. That means that you have to complete, if you're a full-time student, at least 12 credits per term, and your GPA may not be any lower than 2.0.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I want to make sure is that there's no eligibility requirement. Let's say you drop out of school, got a GED, and 10 years later you realize life has a lot more to offer with a college education, and there's no look back on your college grad scores or what you graduated high school with, but that you managed to get into school, you have the need, it's demonstrable, and you're maintaining a two-point average, or this is when you're starting. There's no look back to see what you did, because a lot of people realize what life is about not until after they get out of school and how important it is.
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, the only time there would be a look back is if they had begun college, taken the grant, and then dropped out and resumed at a later point. There is a requirement if you lose eligibility, academic eligibility for the grant, you have to attend a term, reestablish your eligibility before you can be again considered eligible for the grant. So only in that limited circumstances.
Mr. Chair, just that I share Representative Thomas's concern that it doesn't matter where you live in the state, that you have the ability to get at least one of these scholarships.
You can't win on these responses. There's other people in the building wondering why you're going to fund a bunch of 30 and 40 year olds instead of
retired legislators.
Yeah. Representative Jewell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's a couple of places where I have some concerns. One is, I think I heard you state that. A student has to all the time have at least a 2.0. And so my question is whether or not there is a semester of a probationary period.
Ms. Behrens.
Through the chair, Representative Jewell, there is, as a freshman coming in, your academic good standing is, other than the credit completion, is not looked at until you finish your freshman year. By the end of your freshman year, you have to have a 2.0 GPA. So it does allow for that transition.
That was one. The second is, let's say a student coming out of an Alaska high school does not qualify for the scholarship, but chooses to go to an institution or even maybe one of our institutions. And does extremely well. For some reason, they just, college clicked. High school didn't. And they obtain 3.0,
3.5, they're not ever going to be eligible for this, are they?
Through the chair, Representative Jewell, they would not be eligible for the performance scholarship. They would be eligible for the Alaska Advantage Education Grant.
I didn't say that they would be a needs-based student necessarily. And I, you know, in an effort to try and bring people home, you know, there are those that will, and some of them may be needs-based, but in an effort to bring people back to the state, if they perform well at another institution and come back, they wouldn't be eligible for that merit or performance scholarship.
Through the chair, Representative Jewell, that's correct. But I think it is important, as we discussed last year, there may be many policy objectives that would be important to the legislature. However, the policy objectives of the program that was approved last year was really to focus kids in when they're in high school, to recognize that there is an opportunity cost to the pattern of behavior that you're describing. It doesn't mean that that person should be written off, but that there is an opportunity cost to them. And so by making the stakes high in high school, that's where they have to focus. That's where they need to take the courses and prepare. The idea is to transform that education system and reduce the likelihood that many students will fall into the category that you're describing. So it's not a catch-all program. It's a program that is very specifically focused on improving the productivity of the K-12 system and the movement of students into the post-secondary pipeline. Bear in mind that also in this program, they have to begin and use their eligibility within 6 years of graduating from high school. So there are many components of this program that was approved last year that's very specific on keeping the pipeline flowing from high school into post-secondary education.
Mr. Chairman, thank you.
And I don't think Representative Jewell was too oblique in there. I think you understood his message because I certainly heard it loud and clear. So.
And then, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that. I guess, you know, having stated some of the issues that I might be thinking about as we consider this issue, I'm also thinking of what is possible as opposed to how can we make this thing perfect. And I guess, and this is maybe more a memo to self than it is an issue to you, is, you know, while on its face I might have an issue with a performance-based only concept, and would prefer to see a needs-based component as it's currently laid out. You know, on the performance part, I think that becomes an indicator of where our problem areas may lie within our school districts in the state and may actually help us in the ability of how we can provide or develop the capacity to get all of the Alaska students to be able to qualify for this kind of scholarship to either go on to academics and or vocational fields. And I hope that we can come to some sort of conclusion in all of this. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. We're going to get through as many questions. I'm going to try to actually make it to session on time at least once or twice this session. We're going to go to 25 after, and that's about as far as we can stretch it. Representative Edgman, Representative Fairclough, and then Vera.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The governor's funding level for the scholarship, as I understand it, in FY12 is $8.2 million, and the funding amount in the Alaska Advantage program is $1.1 million. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, it is correct.
Okay. And I'll just, without getting into a long sort of flight diatribe here, I'm going to add my voice of concern to the other voices around the table, in that that underscores my concern with the whole scholarship program, is that we've got students in the smaller communities that, you know, the rising tide, for Commissioner Ledoux's presentation, the 12 hearings we had in the Education Committee last year, I'm not fully subscribed to that yet. I think we need more needs-based component of this, and I'll leave my individual comments to a later time, Mr. Chairman.
We'll flesh out those concerns in our next 11 hearings.
We have Representative Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And you'll take over here to close out, as I was just called here.
Oh, okay. 25 after. I know that I haven't done a good job in getting you all to the floor on time in the last couple of days. It's with latitude from the chairman that I asked this question. I had the privilege of attending a presentation that talked about the sample standards for math, science, writing, and reading for the students of Alaska. And so my first point in regards to performing or funding a scholarship is that we haven't aligned K through 12 curriculum. And it's my understanding we do not have standards for at least, is it 10, 11, and 12, or just 11 and 12 for 11th and 12th grade? And I believe I've raised that issue to you privately already. And then on top of that, we don't have a university who, at least from the school district's perspective, these aren't my words, but I have two people now pointing fingers at each other of why each is, why we have students that are being left without an education that they can use to move forward in life for their life endeavors. So what that meant in a complicated way is the university is saying that K through 12 isn't preparing the students to attend college, and the K through 12 system is now telling me in response that the university will accept anyone with any standards and they have no filter, and so that's why all their remedial courses are needed at a college level. So with that in mind, in this presentation, I just want to read for the committee and for the record, in math, what one of our standards are, and see what the general public as well as the committee thinks of the standard. For a 10th grader, this is under math, S&P 5 is the label that it's been given. Explaining in words or identifying the difference between experimental and theoretical probability of independent and dependent events. Can anybody tell me what that means?
No.
Thank you, Representative Dugan. My problem with that is if that is the measurement that we are measuring students with for math, it has no relevant meaning to me, though I can walk my way through the story problem that has been presented. I do understand independent versus dependent events, but I'll move on to writing, not to bore everyone. The student writes about a topic by, and this is at 10th grade level, labeled by our own department at 4.13, organizing an idea using appropriate structure to maintain the unity of the composition, e.g. chronological order, order of importance, comparison and contrast, cause and effect, classification and identification, end of parentheses, using a variety of transitional words and phrases. That's a little more clear. I know they want you to write something. Mr. Hanley, the people of Alaska have chosen to have a citizen legislature, and my only thought after reading these two particular standards is so that they understand what their lawmakers are saying versus technical jargon that are difficult and even less meaningless to a 10th grader, let alone understanding what we want from them. And I don't mean anything I've said to be taken as derogatory toward the people who invested times in developing these standards, but we need to communicate, and I'm trying to communicate with you my frustration in the university pointing fingers at K through 12 and K through 12 pointing fingers at the university, and then reading standards that it would take a person with a master's degree, not a 10th grader, to understand what you actually wanted from them. And so, Commissioner Hanley, I welcome a response, and then the bells are ringing. I know Representative Kerr is waiting, and I hadn't commented at all on this issue, so I appreciate the attention of the committee. I just want to know how we can educate Alaskans.
Thank you, Representative Fairclough. It may not surprise you that when nationally our standards were looked at, and understandability of our standards, we scored a D. It might have been a D minus, I don't remember. So that is something that we've taken on our plate. There are national standards going, being adopted by many states. We are actively involved with that. I just spent some time with several other commissioners from other states and working with our department. There's a timeline in place to change our standards.
Commissioner Hanley, with the support of the committee, if the same people review the standards that wrote the standards, I see no hope for change, though I will continue to hope. I hope that you will provide an opportunity for a PTA or people who can speak the language of Alaskans. That includes Athabascan, Inupiat, or whatever relevant language is in a community, but just plain old-fashioned American English would be helpful. And please, this is not meant derogatory towards you. It's frustration that when we have been here so long and asked for how we could help, that we haven't been asked how we can help, and people are starting to dig now, and that can be dangerous for the department. Representative Duke.
Madam Chair, quickly on that point, I actually have a master's degree, and I didn't understand either.
Thank
one
you, of Representative Dugan. I appreciate your, as always, your support. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. And certainly along the same lines, and it's meant to be constructive. And maybe in some state they have them. Certainly we have lessons in oil and gas taxation all the time. But in lesson in what education is about, we all think we have some. But is there some place where legislators can better understand? When we talk to teachers, sometimes we don't know what they mean. There's a curriculum, and there's a lesson plan, and all those things, and how they get translated, and how they focus. And I've done the legislature in a classroom program, and I think that's great. It was very insightful. And I've talked with my friends over the years who are teachers, and sometimes I understand what they're talking about in reality, what they're talking about, and how it works for students. But is there anything like that, that there are definitions? I think we had we should do the same thing for insurance, if you ask me, but we had that demonstrated yesterday.
Berg, I agree. I agree.
Through the chair, very briefly, for time's sake, Representative Guttenberg, we are looking at a set of standards, not a set of curriculum. Standards of where we think our students need to be. Nationally norm, internationally norm, understandable standards, and developing relevant place-based curriculum that varies for around the state. We're not looking at a statewide curriculum. We are looking at a set of standards that we anticipate our students needing. And I'm hoping to sit before you next year with a new set of standards in hand, in my hand and in yours, to continue the conversation.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Garrett.
Thank you. Ms. Behrens, I just want to make sure I didn't read through the bill closely. I want to make sure two things still remain. The Alaska Advantage Program, the needs-based program, that's still available for voc ed, for certificated courses, all of that, correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Garrett, there are no changes to the structure or eligibility requirement or any other changes to the grant program.
And just one other thing, and then that means there's still the accountability provision, which is if you don't maintain a certain GPA, you lose your needs-based financial aid. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Representative Guerra. With that, just housekeeping. Today is Thursday, April 7th, and again, with the latitude of the committee, it's my mother's birthday. So, thank you. House Finance will meet at 1:30. We'll be taking up HB 104, the Alaska Performance Scholarship. Again, that's at least what's been scheduled. We are under the 24-hour rule, so please watch closely if you're at home. Bills previously heard or scheduled can come back before the committee quickly. We're trying to take things up as we can. But to my knowledge, the only thing I know that's on our plate is HB 104. With that, we're adjourned.